This is VOA News via remote. I'm Tommy McNeil. Cybersecurity teams have been working feverishly to stem the impact of the single biggest global ransomware attack on record. Some details are emerging about the Russia-linked gang responsible breaching the company whose automated network management software was the conduit. Thousands of victims have been identified in at least 17 countries, with ransom demands of up to 5 million reported. The FBI says the scale of the attack means it may not be able to respond to each victim individually. The attack comes less than a month after U.S. President Joe Biden pressed Russian President Vladimir Putin to stop providing safe haven to Rival and other ransomware gangs. Demolition crews have set off explosives to bring down the remaining portion of a collapsed South Florida condo. The demolition late Sunday was the key to resuming the search for victims of the June 24th collapse, and even expected to open new areas for rescue teams to work in. No one has been found alive since the first hours after the disaster. So far, rescuers have recovered the remains of at least 24 people, with 121 still missing. Search efforts were suspended Saturday to allow demolition crews to drill holes for the explosives needed to bring the building down. Concerns had mounted that the damaged Surfside building was at risk of falling on its own. The approach of Tropical Storm Elsa added to those concerns. More at VOAnews.com. This is VOA News. U.S. President Joe Biden celebrated the second July 4th holiday of the coronavirus by declaring that America is coming back together. Service members and first responders were among more than 1,000 guests at a White House event Sunday marking the nation's birthday. Biden highlighted the success of the vacation campaign, or vaccination campaign, I should say, that he championed, but also warned that the fight to against COVID-19 is not over. To the millions yet to be vaccinated, the president said getting your shot is the most patriotic thing you can do. More than 200 Americans still die each day from COVID-19, and a more infectious variant of the virus is still spreading rapidly globally. Cuba has evacuated 180,000 people amid fears that Tropical Storm Elsa could cause heavy flooding as it passes over the island Monday after battering several Caribbean islands, killing at least three people. The Cuban government opened shelters and a move to protect sugarcane and cocoa crops moving along Cuba's southern coast, and it's forecast to cross central Cuba on Monday. The storm's next target is in the U.S., Florida, where Governor Ron DeSantis has declared a state of emergency in 15 counties, including Miami-Dade County, where the high-rise condominium building collapsed last week. Elsa was a Category 1 hurricane until Saturday morning, causing widespread damage in several eastern Caribbean islands on Friday. The Vatican says Pope Francis has reacted well to planned intestinal surgery at a Rome hospital. In a statement late Sunday, a Holy See spokesman says that the 84-year-old Francis had general anesthesia during the surgery necessitated by narrowing of the sigmoid portion of the large intestine. The Vatican gave little detail about the pontiff's condition. Spokesman Matteo Bruni did not say how long Sunday surgery lasted, or did he give any other details about the procedure? Bruni also did not say for how long the Pope was unconscious under anesthesia, or how long Francis is expected to stay in the Rome hospital. Francis is expected to convalesce in a special 10th floor suite reserved for popes. There is more at VOAnews.com. Via remote, I'm Tommy McNeil, VOA News.
Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Monday, July 5th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Demands are growing for direct election of a people's prime minister in Eswatini.
The people have decided to be violent because they have a strong need or a strong feeling that they should be given a chance to elect their own prime minister, not for the king to continue appointing a prime minister.
Kenya's gross domestic product is expected to grow by 4.5% in 2021. The WHO calls for urgent action to stem the rapid spread of COVID-19 across Africa. And Lesotho is upgraded to Tier 2 on the State Department's Trafficking in Persons report.
They are saying they are aware of significant effort that the government of the city is putting in fighting trafficking in persons.
Liberia battles a surge in COVID-19 Delta variant. Those stories plus Samson O'Malley's sports are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Delegation from the Southern African Development Community, SADC, organ on politics, defense, and security, known as Troika, arrived in Eswatini on Sunday on a fact-finding mission. The Eswatini government extended the invitation following a week-long protest that one opposition member said led to the death of as many as 42 people. Acting Prime Minister Temba Masuku said in a statement last week that the government had to call in the army to protect national infrastructure and enforce COVID-19 regulations. He denied that the government had declared martial law. The people have been demanding a voice in the election of their prime minister. Mtandeni Dube is a member of a group of parliamentarians who wrote a letter calling for the election of what they are calling the people's prime minister.
The people have decided to be violent because they have a strong need or a strong feeling that they should be given a chance to elect their own prime minister, not for the king to continue appointing a prime minister to them. Because what they have found out is that, and what we have found out as members of parliament too, is that the king uses the taxpayers' money in enriching himself and his family at the expense of the ordinary Swazis. So then the people now have seen that they need to stand up and try and correct this situation. They went to the members of parliament first to submit the petition that parliament must review the constitution, and then in the next upcoming elections, which will be in 2023, that there should be a smooth way for them, the citizens of the country, to elect their own prime minister.
So the issue of people having a say in electing their prime minister, is that part of the constitution of Eswatini, or the constitution says that the king should pick the prime minister?
Currently, the constitution says the king must appoint the prime minister. But the third part about the constitution is that it is not the constitution by the people. It is a crooked constitution. The king twisted the constitution to favor his leadership.
The acting prime minister, Mr. Masuku, in a statement said that what is going on violates the COVID-19 regulations.
It is true, but the problem is that as COVID-19 has just come into our lives, these things have been boiling up for so long with the Swazi people. And the other sad part is that there was a lot of money that was allocated towards fighting COVID-19 last year. Then that money was not taken to the health department to address the COVID-19 issues, but instead it was looted to enrich the king and the royal family. So in such a way that we are even without vaccine, we are shortage of drugs in the hospital. So then the people, they feel angry about all these things.
What about the allegations that are being made by the acting prime minister that these protesters are being aided by foreigners?
He's lying. All of these protests are owned by the Swazis. There are no foreigners involved here. People have found the courage that they can go out and demand what's right for them, the right to vote for their prime minister.
Mr. MP Tandeni Dube. Thank you so much for taking time to talk with us.
You're welcome, my brother. Thank you so much.
Tandeni Dube is a member of a group of parliamentarians in Eswatini who wrote a letter calling for the election of what they call the People's Prime Minister. The Lesotho government says it is pleased with being upgraded from Tier 3 to Tier 2 on the State Department's Trafficking in Persons report. Home Affairs Minister Mulalentwa Letsosa said this is proof that the government's tangible policies to combat human trafficking are working. In its 2021 Trafficking in Persons report released last week, the U.S. State Department said the government of Lesotho does not fully meet the minimum standards for elimination of trafficking, but is making significant efforts to do so. The U.S. downgraded Lesotho to Tier 3 in 2020. Countries on Tier 3 are ineligible for most U.S. foreign assistance. Home Affairs Minister Letsosa says the government's policy to fight human trafficking are bearing fruit.
Singled out a number of issues which demonstrate that we are seriously engaged in fighting the crime. One, they referred to the amendment which my ministry made last year, December, to Anti-Trafficking Persons Act 2011, where we were removing fines. You know, the Anti-Trafficking Persons 2011 provides that if somebody is convicted of the crime, he or she has an option of either going to prison or paying fine. So we felt that it was not necessary to fine traffickers. Why? Because they have money. Money is not a problem. That is why we resorted to removing that fine and leaving imprisonment for engaging in that kind of a crime. They also noted that the Ministry of Home Affairs has made strides in trying to find out who could be in the ministry completely involved in trafficking persons, especially in the Ministry of Home Affairs. They noted the actions that the ministry has taken, such as transferring some staff members from certain positions and locations, putting them in different positions. Another thing is screening of people who are coming into Lesotho. There are up to now, from November up to now, 31 foreigners whom we have repatriated or charged or rejected when they were there to come to Lesotho. Most of them were detained at the airport. So there are tangible issues we have put forth to say we are serious about this, we want to end this. So they said, okay, maybe you will continue doing the good work, but this one, you are no longer the Tier 3 material, but you can be the Tier 2 material now.
Minister, so remember I did talk to U.S. Ambassador Rebecca Gonzalez also in March this year. One of the things she said was that the embassy was looking forward to sustained action. You said a few things that you said that the embassy is pleased with. So, yes. Is anybody going to go to jail?
One person is convicted, but those who are from Home Affairs, whom we are investigating, the police are continuing the investigation. But we think at some stage, we will see whether they were truly involved or not. We think we'll secure some conviction at some stage, but the investigation is not yet complete. But we are making sure that whatever information is needed by the police from our offices, we offer it without any problem.
So you said, Minister, that you have refused entry. Some foreigners trying to come into Lesotho, suspected human traffickers. Do you find that these foreign traffickers may have connection with your Lesotho citizens?
That is our suspicion, because it is difficult to think that somebody will come from whichever country far away and come to Lesotho to deal in that kind of crime without having somebody doing the groundwork.
Thank you, Minister. It's very nice to always talk with you.
Thank you very much.
Mulalentwa Letsosa is Lesotho's Home Affairs Minister. He was speaking with us from the capital, Maseru. The World Bank says Kenya's gross domestic product, or GDP, is expected to grow by 4.5% in 2021, signaling a partial recovery from the COVID-19 pandemic. From the Kenyan capital, Nairobi, viewers Ruben Kiyama report.
In its latest report, the international lender says economic activity in East Africa's largest economy is likely to accelerate to above 5% on average in 2022 and 2023. Keith Hansen is the World Bank Country Director for Kenya.
However, the recovery is a partial one, and the pandemic is clearly still heavily affecting some sectors as well as overall economic performance. So the outlook very much hinges on how the vaccination effort progresses and on the overall course of the pandemic, both in Kenya and globally, which of course no one can confidently predict yet.
The prospects for Kenya's continuing recovery, which is uneven across sectors, hinge on the progress of the vaccination effort against COVID-19. Albert Mwenda is the Director General of Budget, Fiscal and Economic Affairs at the National Treasury.
The Kenyan economy, however, we think has remained fairly resilient prior to the outbreak. But during the times of the pandemic, the growth has been affected. Kenya, like other countries in the region, had their businesses disrupted, leading to closure of businesses and jobs. And that's why this discussion today is important. Sectors like tourism, trade, transport, education, manufacturing, among others, have suffered.
According to the report titled Kenya Economic Update, Rising Above the Waves, consumption is expected to strengthen. It will likely be supported by a recovery in wages and household incomes and strong remittances. However, many services face a longer path to recovery. It could be weakened by the slow deployment of vaccines due to supply challenges, logistical impediments to domestic distribution, and vaccine hesitancy. Alex Sinat is a senior economist at the World Bank and a co-author of the report.
Fortunately, agriculture, in fact, has been having a rather good performance, which has been a major contributor to Kenya's overall output, actually remaining a lot firmer than in Sydney and many other countries.
Furthermore, external factors such as setbacks to the global economy due to a resurgence in infection rates could adversely impact the projected recovery in Kenya's goods exports, tourism, and capital inflows. Ruben Chama, VOA News, Nairobi.
You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Mbati in Washington. Today is Monday, July 5th. The World Health Organization is calling for urgent action to stem the rapid spread of COVID-19 across Africa, which is being fueled by a surge of more contagious variants of the disease. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
Latest reports say COVID-19 cases in Africa have been rising by 25% every week for the past 6 weeks, bringing reported cases there to more than 5.4 million, including 141,000 deaths. WHO Regional Director for Africa, Machidiso Moeti, warns the rampant spread of the more contagious Alpha, Beta, and Delta variants is raising the pandemic threat across the continent to a new level.
The speed and scale of Africa's third wave is like nothing we've seen before. Cases are doubling every 3 weeks compared to every 4 weeks at the start of the second wave. Almost 202,000 cases were reported in the past week, and the continent is on the verge of exceeding its worst week ever in this pandemic.
In the same period, WHO reports deaths have risen by 15% across 38 African countries to nearly 3,000. The jump is largely due to the highly transmissible coronavirus variants, which have spread to dozens of countries. The most contagious Delta variant has been found in 16 countries. It reportedly has become the dominant strain in South Africa. Moeti says more people are falling ill and requiring hospitalization, even people younger than 45 years. She says evidence is growing that the Delta variant is causing longer and more severe illness. With Africa's lack of life-saving vaccines, Moeti says it is important for people to practice public health measures such as wearing masks, social distancing, and frequent hand washing to prevent the disease from spreading.
With WHO's guidance, countries are taking action to curb the rise in cases. All countries in resurgence in the region have put limits on people gathering to help with physical distancing. They are using nuanced, risk-based approaches informed by the local epidemiology in an effort to avoid nationwide lockdowns that we know cause great harm to livelihoods, particularly for low-income households.
Vaccines are proving highly effective against the COVID-19 variants and in ending devastating surges of severe cases of the disease. They are widely available in the world's richest countries, but not Africa. Moeti is urgently appealing to countries to share their excess doses to help plug the continent's vaccine gap, saying Africa must not be left languishing in the throes of its worst wave yet. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Liberia is battling a surge in the Delta variant of the coronavirus, overwhelming the country's health system. As Rita Gilabwe reports from Monrovia, citizens say they are living in fear.
The Delta variant, first discovered in India, has affected more than 100 countries worldwide, according to the World Health Organization, and that Liberia is no exception. Liberia's Health Minister, Dr. Wilhelmina Njala, said last month that Liberia had recorded the highest number of cases since the outbreak in the country. She said 13 out of the country's 15 political subdivisions are reporting coronavirus cases.
48% Liberian cases have occurred in June. Now the total deaths is up to 141 from March 2020 to now. But only in June, we have 55. This is the biggest amount of deaths that we have. Currently, we have 1,619 active cases around the country.
Minister Jada says Mansourati County, seat of the country's capital Monrovia, has experienced the highest number of cases among affected counties.
We are following 1,715 contacts in Mansourati County. 103 are in treatment facilities around the country. So already 103 people in treatment units we have right in Mansourati County, 57 at the start. Other than 57, 47 of them, they are in critical condition, they are on oxygen.
Dr. Jada says due to the June surge in COVID-19 cases, more people are opting for the AstraZeneca vaccine. Despite the health minister's claims, some Liberians are saying dissemination of the vaccine information is very poor. Roland Mansion, a resident of Monserrate County, says he does not know at what point a person is required to take the vaccine.
My problem with the vaccine is I don't know whether when you are already sick is the time you take this vaccine or you take it before you get sick.
Meanwhile, some Liberians are asking President George Weah to lead by example by taking the vaccine. Jeremiah Biegor says the president's delay in taking the vaccine is creating doubt about the safety of the vaccine.
The same way they're happy in Ghana and they're happy in Liberia, while the president wake up and go and take the vaccine, they didn't take it. When the president take it, the whole Liberia will take it.
Liberia National Public Health Institute, NPHIL, reported that as of 10 p.m. on Thursday, July 1, the country recorded 214 new confirmed cases. This brings to 1,976 the total number of active confirmed COVID-19 cases, and 4 new deaths, bringing to 133 the total number of COVID-19 deaths in Liberia. Rita Jrabwe, VOA News, Monrovia, Liberia.
Girls' education is strong in Senegal's southern region, but teen pregnancy is also higher than in other parts of the country. According to a new study by the African Population and Health Research Center funds, this study also notes the link between higher boys' dropout rates and expectations of becoming a professional athlete. One of the study's researchers, Benta Abuya, spoke to Ricky Stryer about the findings.
Ziguinchor was one region that had very good education indicators, but then on the other hand, there was adverse outcomes in terms of sexual and reproductive health and rights. When we look at the adverse outcomes in terms of sexual and reproductive health, and particularly that in terms of the high adolescent pregnancy rate, we got from our data that in as much as there is implementation of programs in Ziguinchor, they are limited reproductive and health programs. But also what the communities and the parents were able to express, tourism opens up a space whereby constant interaction with the girls and therefore provides a very liberal society. And so tourism may lead to, in certain instances, sexual exploitation of girls, and that could also drive, we saw in terms of adolescent pregnancies. The other reason that we also saw was finding was that the cultural tolerance in Ziguinchor, the acceptance of early marriage and pregnancy, unlike other regions where pregnancy, early pregnancy is shunned at.
A lot of people I've spoken to in southern Senegal, there is less shame attached to girls if they do get pregnant. And while that has a negative effect on their schooling, did you see anything that it had less of an effect, though, on their life overall in terms of still being part of society, not having this heavy feeling of shame put upon them that sometimes happens when it's less accepted?
If I get your question right, you're saying, could also that be a good thing in the sense that they are not in Ziguinchor, the cultural tolerance that girls are not ashamed because of getting pregnant? I think you're right that there are nuances, and in some of these issues, we would really need to really go deeper. I think what we are suggesting to our education stakeholders is that we would need to go a step further, and this study is really trying to go a step further to be able to say, how do we collectively and in a participatory manner be able to talk about these issues.
That was Benta Abuya, a research scientist for the African Population and Health Research Center. She was speaking to Rick Stryer from Nairobi, Kenya. It's time now for Daybreak Africa Sports, and here is Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria. A very good Monday morning to you, Samson.
Good Monday morning to you too, James. We begin the sports with the draws for the newly formed CAF Women's Champions League first zonal qualifiers, expected to take place today in Abidjan in Cote d'Ivoire. The West African Football Union B will host the first zonal draw that will see women's football clubs from Togo, Niger, Ghana, Burkina Faso, Cote d'Ivoire, Nigeria, and the mix contesting for a place in the maiden edition of the CAF Women's Champions League final competition to be played in Egypt. The CAF Women's Champions League competition is a new competition introduced by CAF to develop women's football products in Africa. It will feature top teams from all over the continent. To decide the teams that will participate at the final competition in Egypt later this year, zonal qualifiers will be played as eliminatory rounds. Staying with football news, the Super Eagles in the early hours of Sunday lost 4-0 to Mexico in their international friendly at the California Memorial Coliseum Stadium in Los Angeles, playing in front of 53,000 spectators. The Super Eagles, who were selected from home base players, went down 2-0 in the first 4 minutes. Garrett Raw is a Super Eagles coach. He speaks on why home base players were used to prosecute the international friendly against Mexico.
Our young team is the best professional players from Nigeria playing home. They tried to do well, and they learned a lot. Me also, I saw some interesting players who could be interesting for the next World Cup qualifier in September.
Enyimba Football Club forward Anayo Iwala, who captained the home-based Nigerian side, said it was a great experience for him and his teammates.
It was a great experience for us, the local players, and a very big experience for us at that the game that we want to show our quality, we want to show what we have. And I can tell you, for me and the boys, we were very happy to have this great opportunity.
Day 5 of Wimbledon Championship 2021 was one to remember for Ons Jabeur, as she became the first Tunisian woman in history to reach the fourth round at Wimbledon. In the second round, Jabeur also beat former world number one Venus Williams. The 26-year-old Tunisian tennis player showed her fighting qualities as a great range of shots on Friday, coming back from a set down to beat 2017 champion Garbine Muguruza 5-7, 6-3, 6-2 in 2 hours and 26 minutes. Jabeur will later today take on 2020 French Open champion Iga Swiatek.
She has a very good serve, I gotta say, and I think when she has time with her forehand, she could be very dangerous. It's gonna be a tricky match. It's gonna be a tough match. I know she's very strong mentally. She doesn't want to let go any point, so I'm gonna do the best that I can to win this match.
And that's it on Daybreak Africa Sports. I am Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria. It's back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Samson. Have a great day. And that's it for this Monday, July 5th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for starting your week with us. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa team, I'm James Butte in Washington, hoping that you will have a great week.